Welcome to our AJP Renal Physiology Podcast, which highlights manuscripts published in the journal. Today, we are speaking with Dr. Navarre from the Department of Physiology, Hypertension, and Renal Center of Excellence, Tulane University School of Medicine, New Orleans, Louisiana, about his paper entitled Activation of the Renin-Angiotensin System by a Low-Salt Diet Does Not Augment Intratubular Angiotensinogen and Angiotensin II in Rats, which is published in the March 2013 issue of AJP Renal Physiology by Drs. Wei-Jin Shao, Dale Seth, Manoffel Prieto, Hiroyuki Kobori, and L. Gabriel Navarre. In this paper, Dr. Shao and Navarre and colleagues study the physiological role of elevated renin-angiotensin system in urinary angiotensinogen and angiotensin II excretion. Previously, these investigators have reported that angiotensin II infusion resulted in increased blood pressure and also increased intrarenal RAS, as well as increased urinary angiotensinogen and angiotensin II excretion. In the current studies, they placed animals on a low-salt diet. They found a small increase in blood pressure, mild renal fibrosis, increased renin-angiotensin system in the kidney, but no increases in urinary angiotensinogen or angiotensin II. Welcome, Dr. Shao and Navarre. I would first like to ask you, what is the most important contribution of your article to our understanding of the intrarenal renin-angiotensin system?
Thank you very much, Dr. Bell. I think the main thing that is very important is that the study has to be interpreted in the light of previous studies that we have done showing that when we activate the renin-angiotensin system by infusions of angiotensin II or other mechanisms, we see that there is a marked increase in the intrarenal renin-angiotensin system, even though the juxtaglomerular cell renin is decreased. And along with the increase in intrarenal angiotensin II in the pathophysiological models that develop hypertension, there is also a marked augmentation of tubular angiotensinogen formation and secretion into the tubular system. This leads to an increased intratubular generation of angiotensin II, especially in the distal nephron segments, which are then reflected by increases in urinary angiotensinogen and urinary angiotensin II levels. This has been shown in a number of studies, but it was always a question as to whether or not physiological activation of the renin-angiotensin system by increases in salt diet would also stimulate the tubular angiotensinogen, leading to increases in urinary angiotensinogen and angiotensin II levels. We actually expected that this would occur, but to our surprise, when we did the stimulation, the intrarenal renin-angiotensin system, by simply putting these rats on an extremely low-salt diet, we did get the marked augmentation of intrarenal angiotensin II levels. This was accompanied by the well-known stimulation of renin in the juxtaglomerular cells, but it did not lead to the increases in urinary angiotensinogen and urinary angiotensin II that we observe in the hypertension models. So we think there's a very distinct difference between the physiological activation of the intrarenal renin-angiotensin system and the pathological activation of the renin-angiotensin system in the kidney. And indeed, it appears that the stimulation of the intratubular angiotensinogen is more a pathological response than a physiological response. And so we think that this paper highlights the very important distinction that occurs between physiological activation of the intrarenal angiotensin system and pathological activation of the renin angiotensin system.
Maybe you would like to elaborate just a little bit more on the consequences of the difference in the intratubular angiotensin II in these two models of the angiotensin II infusion versus the low-salt diet in terms of salt and water balance and blood pressure control.
Well, certainly it's been well known as a consequence of many studies that when you go on a low-salt diet, you do markedly activate the intrarenal renin-angiotensin system, and the circulating renin and angiotensin II levels are also elevated. We think that this is a very important physiological response, but it is not accompanied by any major activation of either inflammatory factors or cytokine systems. We did see a mild interstitial fibrosis, which could have been due to the increases in tissue angiotensin II levels, but this is very mild compared to what we see in the pathological models. And I think this allows us to recognize that angiotensin II by itself, if it is physiologically stimulated, does not lead to tissue damage or does not lead to activation of inflammatory factors or cytokines. In contrast, when we have a hypertension model, such as the one obtained when we chronically infuse angiotensin II, we see that this is accompanied by a marked increase in oxidative stress, and a number of cytokines are activated. Thus, there is an associated inflammatory response. We think that that is a very important factor that has to be present in order for elevated angiotensin II levels to cause the kind of tissue damage, glomerular damage, and interstitial damage that has been attributed to just increases in angiotensin II levels. This is very important because it does indicate and emphasize that angiotensin II by itself is not necessarily a marked inflammatory factor. It must synergize with inflammatory and oxidative factors in the tissue, and together then, these factors cause increased tissue damage associated with hypertension. So we have to recognize that then angiotensin II by itself is not a factor that is going to cause severe injury or severe interstitial or glomerular damage.
So what are the implications of this study for using urinary components of the RAS system or the renin angiotensin system as biomarkers, and under what clinical conditions might this information be useful?
What the outcome of this study is important in the sense that it now allows us to use urinary angiotensinogen levels, which are easier to measure than angiotensin II, as a marker of pathological activation of the renin angiotensin system. It is not a marker of physiological activation of the renin angiotensin system, but in several different models of renal disease and diseases associated with renal injury, such as various models of hypertension, including gallbladder hypertension, angiotensin II infusion, and genetically induced hypertension, we do see activation of the urinary angiotensinogen system. And in particular, in diabetic patients, patients with chronic glomerulonephritis, and other renal diseases, including chronic kidney disease, these are also associated with activation. So we think that the urinary angiotensinogen is a very important early marker of generic aspects of intrarenal injury, and that it allows us really to say, okay, where the urinary angiotensinogen is elevated, we know now that this is a marker and a predictor of increased renal injury. It really helps us establish the urinary angiotensinogen measurements as a marker of pathological activation of the renal angiotensin system.
So you show in the very low salt diets that there is a small increase in blood pressure and a mild renal fibrosis. How does this relate to the low salt diets that are recommended in patients or in humans to prevent hypertension and for general well-being and health?
Thanks a lot, Darwin. That's an important thing, and we want to make a distinction. These rats were placed on an extremely low-salt diet just to see if we could activate it. It has been shown previously that there are mild and self-limiting increases in blood pressure with an extremely low-salt diet in rats. We're not sure if this actually would happen with even moderate salt restriction in human subjects. We think that this study should not be interpreted as an indication that human subjects going on a low-salt diet will have the degree of activation that we see in the rats. So we feel that the important guidelines of reducing salt intake in human subjects and helping to reduce blood pressure is still very important and is well supported by studies from many different laboratories. I don't think the mild increase in blood pressure or the mild interstitial fibrosis that we see in these rats would occur in human subjects unless they were placed on an extremely low-salt diet for a long period of time. But we know from these studies in several populations that are maintained on a low-salt diet that there is not serious renal injury. So I think we have to be careful about interpreting these studies in the rats incorrectly.
Thank you, Dr. Navarre, for being a part of our March podcast. We look forward to seeing more of your papers in our journal.